still gets us. Hopefully we are taking a few alcohol as we work this day. We're grateful to the AA fellowship.
I know what I'm doing. Let me do my job, all right? Let me do my job, okay?
Thank you. Okay. In order to provide an atmosphere of recovery, please turn off all cell phones and refrain from subgrouping. Thank you for your cooperation. And we have found a phone and a set of keys. If you're missing your phone or a set of keys. Okay, well. All right. Just let you know. Right here. No, dear, it's orange. Okay. Oh. Okay. My name is Portia. I'm Addie. I'm filling in for y'all secretary this morning. He called me at last minute. I'm doing the best I can. The speaker for today is Peter, and I'm so glad he showed up.
Anthony.
Yeah.
Anthony B.
All right.
That's right. My name is Anthony. I'm an addict.
Anthony.
It's a great day to be alive, right? And you know what? I apologize for being a little late, but I missed my turn, and I ended up getting pulled over down the street about 5 blocks.
Yeah. Right on time.
Speeding. I sped before I got here, and I'm speeding again. But you know what? To me, that's okay. I thank the officer for doing his job. And, you know, that's one thing I can do today. I can be thankful for the law keeping me straight. Because, see, before I got here, I had nobody direction. I had no direction. And for years, all the law did was try to steer my life in a better course than I could steer for myself. You understand? You know, when they locked me up, when they sent me to a psych ward, you know, when they put me in a rehab and said, you need to go there. I didn't listen for a while. And because I suffered, and I suffered more, and my life went deeper down. You know, I ain't going to get here and tell you no war stories. I'm not going to tell you all these drugs I did and all that stuff. Because, see, that's not what it's about. This is about recovery.
That's right.
Bottom line is, I used for 20 years. From 13 to 33, and by the end of my addiction, I was homeless, I was hopeless, and I was helpless. I call it the three H's. I was living on the streets of D.C., was unemployable, could not steer my life in a better direction. I thought living with the homeless people down at Lafayette Square, man, I was living the high life on right next to the White House. I thought, man, look at this. I'm living next to the president. Talk about ego. You know, but the bottom line was, you know, every time a phone rang at my parents' house, my dad would always answer it, and he would say, you know, your mother and your grandmother are crying because they think this was the phone call that you were dead. And when that last phone call came in on August 26, 1992, and I had been locked up down at 14th Street again, once again, and my dad just shook his head and he told me, he says, man, he says, good, you're locked up, at least we know you're safe. And for the first time in my life, I said to myself, I said, you're right, Dad. You're right. At least I'm alive. Someone saved me once again. And it was my first admission of complete helplessness from this disease addiction. The lieutenant of D.C. police told me I was nothing but the scum of the earth. And as far as he was concerned, he looked like I'd been living in this car I was living in, and I'd been homeless for weeks, which he was right too. And he says, we have place for people like you to go. And for the first time in my life, I looked at him, and I shook my head, and I said to myself, you're right. And I'll never forget it. I was sitting on a street corner there and leaning against the sign. I looked up, I turned around and looked up at the sign. It was a one-way sign. And the first thing that popped in my mind was Narcotics Anonymous. Because, see, I was introduced to this fellowship back in 1987 by Judge Fahmy at the PG County Courthouse. He made me stand up and my two parents. And he looked at me and he says, Mr. P, he says, not only are you a disgrace to our heritage, and he's an Italian, but you're also a disgrace to our society. And he humiliated me to the point where he said, have you ever heard of Narcotics Anonymous? I said, no. He said, I think you ought to go there. And believe it or not, I went home and I picked up a yellow pages or white pages, and I found there was Narcotics Anonymous in that book. And I went to my first meeting. And I found something that was different, that it looked good to me. Because, see, I came to these meetings that very next day or 2 days later, and I saw you people look pretty happy and look like life was going okay. But I didn't want to take the responsibility to do what you suggested to me. And the suggestions were to get a sponsor, pick up the step book, work the steps, go to meetings, get a home group, get a service commitment, and start doing what we ask. Five simple suggestions. And I didn't do that for 5 years, and because of that, my life got much more unmanageable. I found out that your life can get a whole lot worse. So when I got locked up that last time on August 26, 1992, I was completely defeated. And I started to listen. And I remember being at that courthouse at 4th and E Street, Northwest. Okay? And they released me on my own recognizance. I have no idea why. I had stolen purses, credit cards, all kinds of stuff in my car, and I don't know why they let me go, but they did. And I said, and I'm telling myself, why'd you let me go? And I walked out, and I walked up to the corner, right there at 4th and E Street, and the first thing that wanted to cross my head was to step across that street. And then there was something telling me, nope, it's time to stay and face the music. And what I did was I turned around and I walked back in that courthouse. And I knocked on door after door after door asking for help. If they would have told me go to a halfway house in Southeast, I would have went there. If they would have found, I said, I just need somewhere to go for a while. And I was there all day, and I probably looked pathetic carrying my shoelaces on my shoulder. And with a long beard and, you know, long hair. In fact, I had a homeless person trade me the shirt off their back because theirs smelled better than mine. And the shirt said, running for Jesus, and I probably looked like a Jesus freak. But you know what? At about 4 o'clock, one of the guards at the front door told me the nurse at the nurse's station was looking for me. And he says, go upstairs. And I went upstairs to the nurse's station. And the nurse told me, says, I found a place you can go. I said, okay, where? He says, the place is called Reality House. It's in Laurel. I said, oh my God, I've been there before. I was there 2 years before that. I said, if that's where you want me to go, that's where I'm going. And what I did was I called my dad at that point. And my dad said, okay, I'll come pick you up. You got a place to go? I'll pick you up. And the very next morning, I went over to the outpatient program for 2 days and went home and went to a meeting. And then they accepted me and let me back in the reality house. And it was the most humiliating experience I ever had in my life because I faced the counselors that I had there 2 years before. And I never forget Melvin told me, says, man, he says, what you going to do different this time? He used to make me stand on top of a chair. What are you going to do different this time? And I had no idea. Well, the one thing I did know was I wanted this thing more than ever. I wanted this more than anything in my whole life. And I wanted to do something different. So I started to listen. And I started to follow direction. You know? And I didn't want to break any rules because I didn't want to get thrown out of that rehab. I had enough. I was up to here. I was 33 years old, homeless, never been married, never had any kids. I always wanted that white picket fence, you know, with the family, or, you know, I wanted this stuff. But see, I was married to drugs and alcohol for all those years. You see what I'm saying? So I listened and I followed direction, and I did exactly what they told me to do. I read the books, textbooks, I did the readings, I did the step work there while I was there, and I didn't break no rules. And then near the end of my 35 days there, you know, they told me, they said, you know, you're in charge now. I said, what? Make sure everybody does what they're supposed to. I said, who, me? You know what? If you broke a rule, that's all on you. Because see, it was a full-time job. Just learn how to take care of me now. So if you broke a rule, let somebody else talk to you about it.
Right.
You know? See, we went down the street. I picked up, I'll never forget it. We went down the street and I carried it in my pocket. Man, I carried it for the last 21 years. Because I got a 24-hour day chip I picked up. It's an AA chip, I'm sorry. But that's where they sent me. 24-hour day chip to the first meeting I went to. And I picked that up. And everybody was stopping at the phone booth and sticking a dime in the phone booth. And I said, no, not me. Because I knew if you did something wrong, you were going to get thrown out. You know? And I picked up this chip and I said, man, I said, today is the first day of the rest of my life.
That's right.
I'm starting a new life today. I have to learn how to forgive myself for everything I did wrong yesterday. It's gone. Throw it in the ocean. I can't deal with it no more. And I started a new life. Stop beating myself up. What a revelation. And when I started doing that, man, see, life started to change. Recovery started to work me. I didn't have to do anything. All I had to do was pray to God and ask Him what to do next. You know? And then when it came time to get ready to leave, I'm like, I'm on jitters, man. Because see, I sat in that chair for 35 days, man. And every time the door opened, I held it tight. I thought it was the PG County police coming to get me for another charge. I don't want to leave. You know? I said, where do you want me to go? And I took their suggestion. They sent me to an Oxford house in Adelphi, right up the street from TikTok and Langley Park. I said, oh my God, I lived there in my car. I lived in my car in Langley Park. But see, reality was facing me all the time. Every time I went out to a meeting, I would pass where I sat in a car and used. And hear all the, whoo, yo, over here. I would hear it. And I wanted recovery more than anything. So when I thought about using, I would lift my hand and say, I feel like using. I would do the suggestions that they said. Simple suggestions. Get up and share. And I lived in an Oxford house for almost 4 months.
All right. That's right.
God is beautiful, isn't He? What a great day to be alive! So, I'm here to let you know that, man, recovery has given me a gift. And my responsibility today is to follow that gift. You know? What it's like today is I have a second wife. I'm remarried again for the second time.
All right.
I have a 6-year-old at home.
Nice.
From my second wife. I have a 17-year-old daughter who I went through, who I took through a rehab over 2.5 years ago. I took her through Pathways. And I raised her in these rooms. You understand what I'm saying?
Come on.
She was raised from an infant. She was here at the convention 14 years ago when I was the indigent registration chair.
Yes.
And she sat in these rooms her whole life. And do I think she would use? No. It's one of the hardest things I ever did was take her through intensive outpatient. But God is great, because today she's 17 and she's clean.
Yeah.
She's in 12th grade, getting ready to graduate. She's been getting on a roll. She's in Jump Start at college, and she's taking criminology. Imagine that. She just bought her own car, and she came down here, and she's just gone home because she had to work today. You know, my dad died about 7 years ago. That was a hard thing, too. You know, but I was there for him for his funeral. I was there for Mom. Because my brother was in prison a few years ago. I used to get up for the last 3 years to come to this convention, and I would take my mother with me. Because her and I would get up on Sunday morning and go to ECI to visit my brother in prison. You see what I'm saying? Because I was taking care of Mom. It was the only brother I had. Recovery, man. What a gift. This program has taught me how to live. Taught me to give back what's freely given to me. My mother went to Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. She went to Al-Anon. She went to Tough Love. She went to all them programs. And she told me in the end, she said, "You know what? I love you, but you got to get out." She was my number one contributor to my delinquency. And then finally she said, "I had enough." You know? And it was the best damn thing that ever happened to me. And I'm entirely grateful for her for that. And today, man, it's hard, but she's got a lung infection. She has to go for an operation in a few weeks. And she just found out 2 days ago from her cardiologist. She also has a tumor in her heart now. So I have to leave here. I was staying here with my 6-year-old son, but I have to leave here on Tuesday to take her down to Washington, D.C. to the cardiologist. You know? And I pray and hope everything's going to be all right. I went and visited my dad at his grave the other day and told him, "Dad, I'm not ready for Mom to leave yet, but if you want her, you know, it's up to you." You know, and it's all up to God, man. I've got no control over any of this, but all I can do is be there. Be there for the people that love me the most are the ones I hurt the most in my addiction. Right? They're the ones. They were the ones I pushed away because I wanted to feel worse about myself during the course of my addiction. My responsibility today is to bring the people that love me the most closer to me. You know? And learn how to take care of them. See, that's what I learned through these steps. The steps have taught me how to live and how to give back and how to make amends to the best of my ability. My dad, before he passed away, I was single at the time because I just got divorced and I was raising my daughter by myself for 10 years. I took Mom and Dad on vacation with me the last 4 years before he passed away. They never wanted to go on vacation because they was afraid of what they would find missing when they got home. In the end. But this time I got the opportunity to take them on vacation. It was the best damn amends I could ever make to my dad. You know? I'm sorry for the tears, man. But they're tears of joy and sadness at the same time. Okay? You know, God has also taught me to learn how to take care of myself. You know? This is a spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, you know, disease. This addiction. You know? When I got clean, man, I couldn't even run a half a block without being out of breath after smoking two packs of cigarettes plus anything else I could put in a pipe, including wallpaper, whatever, soap, whatever it was, you know. It's just amazing my lungs are even working today. You see what I'm saying? But today, if my knee feels okay, I could probably run 7 or 8 miles down that beach. You know? Recovery has taught me how to live and take care of me. Yeah, I exercise a lot too. But that's okay. Because see, it's another addiction, but it's a good one for me. Because it helps clear my mind and clear my spirit to help me heal better. You know? Helps me see the light faster. You know? I can get up in the morning and look out and see the sunrise and pray to God. Oh, it's another beautiful day. And the reason I was late this morning, because I was sitting down in my little condo reading my meditation books, and Mark calls me, says, I can't make it, I'm sick, you're going to be there on time? And I'm going, yeah, Mark, I'm going. Right? And of course, with modern technology, I left the GPS off, and then when I turned it on, I said, oh my God, I'm at 31st Street, and there's the lights. Oh, thanks, officer, for making me realize I went too far. All right, I'm just going to give you a warning just for, you know, this and that and this and that. But you're going to have to get a speeding ticket because you are going a little fast. I said, okay. You know, but see, today, man, and also my other healing process. See, I'm involved in a hospital institution, and I've been in H&I since I had 6 months clean. I've been going into rehabs, into jails. I go to the reality house that I got clean in. And I've been going there for the last 20 years, okay, once a month until they close, and then they open back up, and I went again. I'm addicted. I go to Anne Arundel County Detention Center, and I take meetings in there. I'm the panel chair for Anne Arundel County Detention Center, and I've been doing that for almost 12 years now. In fact, when I first started, my ex-wife, I thought she was coming in the door when they were taking me for a tour of the intake. I said, oh my God, who's coming in the door? Right? But it wasn't her. She ended up getting locked up a week later in there. Anyway, but, you know, I take the meetings in there because, see, back in 1987, I spent some time in there. You know? I spent time in that place. And then I did meetings. I was with H&I, Mark L., who couldn't be here this morning. He got me involved in taking meetings in the Tall Oaks High School over in Bowie. I said, meetings in the high school? I was a drug dealer in high school. All I did was carry the drugs. I went to Fairmont Heights back in 1970s in the hippie generation. Man, it was nothing. Mom would pack my lunch. I'd throw the lunch away and I'd fill it up with a bunch of dope. And carry that up to the school. And I said, take a meet. I called my sponsor. He says, man, he says, sound like good amends to me. Sound like he'd make good amends taking a meeting in the school. So I started that meeting. And then a few years later, Croom over in PG County, they decided they wanted to do a meeting too. So we ended up taking two meetings in narcotics meetings into a high school. And I did that until they stopped doing the meetings. And that was almost 13 years later. See, the reason I'm telling you all this is because all these things have helped heal me from the disease of my addiction. Right? All those people I harmed when I was in high school selling drugs, I don't know how am I supposed to make amends. I've seen some of them when I went up to the prisons and taking meetings or into the jails or in the rehabs. I've seen them. And I tell them I'm sorry, but, you know, How do you make amends to people you don't see? You know, indirect amends. That's what I did. You know, and thank God, man. Thank God for sponsorship and following directions. You know, almost 2 years ago, the first sponsor I had when I was in Reality House, you know, almost 22 years ago, they said you can't break no rules, you can't make any phone calls. They said, can I have an envelope and a stamp? So I went back and I wrote him a letter. I said, would you still be my sponsor? And he wrote me a letter back while I was in there and said, yes, I will. Call me the day you get out. And I called him every day. And I called him sometimes 2 times a day, 3 times a day, for almost 3 years. You know? And just because I got clean didn't mean life got perfect. I was making a lot of mistakes, man. I had sex problems, living problems, stealing problems, gambling problems. All these new addictions would come up. I didn't know how to handle them, but I just say, I don't feel like using. I don't want to use no matter what. So I would call him 2, 3, 4 times a day sometimes, you know. And he said, ain't you had enough yet? You know? I mean, I can remember smoking nicotine, driving down the road, and the cigarette would fall in the car, man, and I'm trying to find it while I'm driving, right? Ain't you had enough yet? It was 20 years, January 1st, that I stopped smoking nicotine. You know, I found it necessary to give up an addiction that was causing me havoc. You know, buy a brand new pair of clothes and then burn a hole in it. What the hell? You know, these are the kind of things that happen, man. You know, so what I'm trying to say to you guys, man, his recovery is a gift, man. You know? I don't know what else to tell you today, but, man, I thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. I thank Judge Familia. I was down there. I was down in PG County Courthouse just about 6 or 7 months ago to get a clearance for security, to sell home security. I had to get a clearance and get some of my records shown. I had to show them, so I had to go through all this rigmarole, and he was still in the courthouse. Almost 25 years later, and I was compelled, man. I walked up into the courtroom to the bailiff, and I said, when's he taking a break? Right? And the bailiff says, he just came back in. I said, oh. Because I wanted to go to his chamber, man, and I wanted to give that judge a hug and tell him, thank you. Thank you for suggesting Narcotics Anonymous to me. Because it's the best thing that's ever happened in my life. See, I can be thankful for all those people that helped me today. Whether it been that police officer, he might have pulled me over when I was using. I don't know. You know? But be thankful for everyone that's here to guide us. The sponsor, the PO. You know, when I went to D.C. to give a urinalysis, I had to go to D.C. for almost 2 years. And I had to hop on Metro, the bus, the 4th and E, you know, all that stuff, and give a urinalysis. By the end of that 2 years, I told him, thank you, man. He says, can you start a meeting here? You know? He asked me if I could start a meeting down at his place. You know, that they needed somebody to do something. You know, that's what kind of relationship I have with the people that helped me. You know? Be grateful, man. Be grateful for everyone that helps guide you in a course that's better than you can guide yourself. And I guarantee you learn how to live a better way of life. Thanks for letting me share. My name's Anthony Manatee.